I think the one thing that I wished I knew was how to communicate better, you know, with my wife about it, and the cost burden and the time burden. I work as a management consultant. I did 20 years in the Navy, and I am very comfortable with that kind of stress in life. But I don't know that I did a good enough job relating that to my wife and how she was going to respond to that and how we were going to respond to that.
Success isn't just about what you achieve. It's about living a life that reflects your values and priorities. Welcome to Engineer Your Success, the podcast that helps you lead with intention and live fulfilled.
You know how to solve tough technical problems, but leading people? That's a different challenge. Stepping into leadership means more than just knowing your stuff. It's about inspiring, communicating, and navigating challenges with confidence. At Engineer Your Success, we help technical pros like you grow into leaders who just don't manage the work, but lead the people who do. If you're ready to lead with clarity and impact, visit EngineerYourSuccessNow.com today, because thriving isn't just for others, it's for you. I want to welcome you to the Engineer Your Success podcast. My name is Dr. James Bryant, your host and your guide to designing and living a life where you're winning at work and at home. And I hope that you are having a great week. Today, we have a great guest. His name is Mr. Matt Thompson. I'm looking forward to some of the wisdom that he can share with our podcast listening audience. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Dr. Bryant. I'm really excited to be here. I think wisdom might be a little strong. We're going to talk about some fun things and some things I've learned, but I don't know if I'd call it wisdom quite yet.
Yeah, wisdom may come in others and what they may learn from your story and your journey and how they might be able to apply it to theirs. So why don't you tell the listening audience a little bit about yourself?
I out of high school, I tried to go to the Naval Academy. I was a first alternate. I didn't make it in, so I enlisted. I've always had a certain motivation or drive. I don't really know why. I didn't have a list of things I wanted to accomplish. Long story short, out of that, I applied for an ROTC scholarship. I went to college for 4 years. I got a degree, went back to the Navy. Turned out to be a phenomenal time. I retired in 2017. While I was driving along, I got like a couple master's degrees. And then I opened a training company, and then I started a franchise, and I work as management consultant. So a pretty wide breadth of things.
So what was your initial degree?
I have a bachelor's in chemistry that I've never actually used in any way. One of those people that can't figure out what they're doing in life. I got a master's in IT. Computers are cool. IT's fun. Still didn't really finish it up where I ended up. So then I got an MBA. And then I kind of found my niche. I really love business. And the MBA was the degree that really got me on the path to where I'm going now.
No, I think that's a great lesson for folks. If first you don't succeed, try again. You try to go to the Naval Academy. Didn't work out. So what do? You enlist. That worked out for you. You go to ROTC, you get a degree in chemistry. No, don't quite want to do that. Let's do something else. You get another degree. Is that going to work? No, let's do something else. But you kept going until you found something that fit what you wanted to do.
Yeah. So I think the Naval Academy story is a super fun one, right? Because I went to the same high school as the person that got the appointment. I knew her. She and I were friends. And she was an awesome individual, totally deserving. But yeah, total shock news. Hey, by the way, you're not going. All right. Let's figure out the next plan then.
So you got your MBA, you were working as a management consultant, and then you also started a leadership development or training company. Let's talk about that aspect of life.
So I was getting close to retirement, and around 2017, I had a couple of good friends. They're like, what are you going to do next? I don't know. It's always those difficult questions that you don't know how to answer. I was like, I don't know. And they're like, well, have you considered project management? And I was like, no, I don't really know what that is, because it's not really what the military calls it. But I found out it's a very natural fit, something that really fits my personality well. I'm pretty extroverted, pretty hard charging. I like to be in charge of things and make things happen, which is definitely what project management is. So I went and got my PMP, my project management professional certification. The instructor's like, hey, you did a really great job. Do you want to come teach for me? I was like, sure, that sounds awesome. So for a while I was teaching for them. And then I'm like, why am I paying someone else? Why don't I just basically cut out the middleman and start my own training company? So that's really how that started. Now I have several consultants that teach for me. I still teach classes on my own. So yeah, that part's a pretty unique story.
And so this entrepreneurial bug continue to kind of be there. So let's talk about some of your other entrepreneurial adventures.
People use that word a lot, like entrepreneurial adventures. I don't know that I ever looked at it that way. I just looked at it as another thing that I was doing, another thing on the sheet of work. Now, as I got towards retirement, my wife and I, we'd done pretty good, saved up some money and had some ideas. At the time, I didn't think I wanted to work forever. As it turns out, I do. We could talk about that in a minute. But one of the things that we started doing is look at what kind of business we could invest in or that we could own, you know, and that turns out very entrepreneurial. Like we bought a hammer and nails franchise. And so I'm a franchise owner. We've had it open about 18 months.
Can you talk a little bit about the franchise?
So first, we'll talk about how we ended up in the franchise, and then we'll talk a little bit more hammer and nails. So my wife was pretty clear. She's like, we're not doing food. If you've looked at franchises at all, that takes about 2/3 of the list away. So I had a good army friend opening a hammer and nails in Texas. I'm from San Antonio, so they live in El Paso. And I started looking into it. Hammer and Nails is a franchise that focuses on men's grooming, like manicures, pedicures, facials, straight razor shaves, like hot towel service, high-end barbering, very much like man cave setup. You get your own 50-inch TV and Bose headphones. We have a full bar. Like, it's very much a men's kind of experience. When I was in the Navy, we would get that kind of experience in the Middle East a lot. So I was very comfortable with it. There's not a lot of that in Texas. So it was an opportunity, and here we are.
Yeah, it's interesting. When I think of self-care and taking care of yourself, I don't associate men in that version of self-care. Doesn't mean it's not a good thing. It's just not the first thing that comes to mind. So for the guys that are coming to your shop, what is the feeling or sense that they come in with and that they leave?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. I would say that my opinion was a little skewed on how I thought the shop was going to go. I'm very comfortable getting manicures, pedicures, but again, that's still probably on the edge of what most men think. Most men don't think that's something they would ever consider doing. I still get, like, on social media posts, people's opinions on men getting that kind of care. But I also think it's much more open these days, and it's growing every day. I have a great Google profile review from a gentleman that came in the other day. He's 53. He's like, hey, it took me till 53 to get my first pedicure, and it was a life-changing event. We really miss on first responders, guys that wear boots a lot, oil field workers, guys that are really rough on their feet. But as the business started, most of our clients are still on the barbershop side. And once they find a barber, they're going to stick with that person. Men are pretty loyal in that way. They don't vary. Yeah. Once they find their guy or their lady, they're locked in. We're growing the manicure, pedicure side. But as far as haircuts, waxing, straight razor, that side's doing pretty well. The company is definitely split on both. It's a fun experience watching that grow.
And what's been the biggest surprise for you?
I think there's been a few surprises. I'll be pretty honest with you because it's going to be a fun discussion. I think that African-American men are far more comfortable on the manicure-pedicure side than other races. So we have a huge clientele there. They're very comfortable with that. That was a little surprising to me. We actually have a lot of oil field workers now. They're definitely coming and getting their feet done. I think that was very surprising to me. The thing that was most surprising is the challenge of getting people in the shop. I live in San Antonio. There are some competitors running similar programs, but Hammer and Nails, just when you hear that name, people are like, is that a hardware store? Part of the challenge that I've had is every time I talk to someone about the shop, I have to explain what it is. And that's a lot of effort. Now we're starting to get where the word of mouth is growing, and that makes me pretty happy. But yeah, that's the hard part.
So in a sense, it's when you hear the name, there's a certain picture or image that's conjured up, and that's not necessarily what's happening in the shop.
I think another part of it, especially on the entrepreneurial side, Hammer and Nails is a pretty young franchise. So my shop is shop number 29. They have a goal to get to 100 shops nationwide. So we're growing really fast, but we're not super well known.
So how often do you do market research of the current customers that you have?
Yeah, to be honest with you, I don't do that as much as you might think. I actually have a marketing firm and corporate that does that work on a personal level. I try to talk to every client that comes in and see what brought them in. We also do quite a few like events with like nonprofits, veterans organizations, you know, to get our word out there. I'm a veteran, so that makes a natural fit for us. So when it comes to what kind of market research I'm doing, it's more like face-to-face handshake. You know, just kind of, hey, what have you heard about us? What do you know? What would make you come in? But we also have a marketing team that manages some of that too.
So does the marketing team do all of your marketing, or is it shared resources?
So there's organic, which kind of starts with corporate, right? And as that goes, you pay into that as an entrepreneur. But then I also have my own marketing firm that basically is doing paid advertisements. So Google, Facebook, Instagram, they're tracking all my metrics and all of that. And we have a meeting every month.
You've mentioned a few different segments, whether it's the oil field workers, different segments that are having great experiences. And what I found useful in the clients that I work with is let's start digging into what made that experience positive for that individual. And when you're able to capture enough of that in their own words, you take that and you feed that back into your marketing machine because you want to draw more of those people in because that is who you are. That's right. What you're doing.
So I think it's a great point, but the franchise kind of does it the other way. We are built on a high-end customer experience. That should lead to reviews from customers. If customers aren't providing feedback that they're getting an amazing experience, it's because we're not following a protocol to provide that service. Our service is driven by providing a high-end service every client, every time. I'm pretty convinced that our service, like our experience is so good that if they come in the door, they will come back. And our numbers bear that out. The challenge that I've had over the first 18 months is getting people in the door the first time.
So what's next on the horizon for you as an entrepreneur, as a franchise?
So, you know, one of the things that we didn't talk about, we kind of joked about some of this, the schooling that I've done. The thing on the horizon right now is I'm finishing up my dissertation for my DBA. So I should graduate in August. I guess we're just going to play it by ear a little bit. I do have 3 licenses to open 3 shops in San Antonio, but that's a time-based thing. We'll see how the first one goes and continue to work from there. I feel like I need to maybe learn Spanish next. I'm in a very Spanish-friendly environment. One thing I can tell you confidently, there will be something.
You are a lifelong learner. You have a hunger to learn, but you also want to implement and apply. So it's not enough for you to learn. You want to be in environments where you can put that learning into practice.
Yeah, I think people ask me all the time, like, where does that motivation come from? I'll tell you, I have no idea. Like, I don't, like that part I have not figured out, but there's some, but I don't know what it is.
People are driven by a lot of different things. And it could be part of what drives you is just learning and growing in that way and continuing to develop yourself and continue to evolve.
I think that's true. I really enjoy the journey of learning new things and meeting new people. I'm a huge fan of that for sure.
So there's somebody listening to this podcast episode, they're interested in possibly opening a franchise or dipping their toe into entrepreneurship. What are 3 pieces of advice that you would have for them?
I think the first one is the most important, and then the other 2 kind of go along with that. Just do it, right? Don't be paralyzed by trying to analyze and find the perfect solution. I don't believe there's a perfect answer. Start moving forward and then pivot if you need to. So just do it. Make it happen. I was speaking to a good friend of mine, and she's like, you're just opening a franchise? How do you know how to do it? I don't know how to do it, but I'm going to figure it out. I think 2 and 3 is like, don't be afraid to ask for help. And 3, ask anybody that has ever done it. I think there's this misconception that business people aren't willing to help or talk about it. I haven't seen that. I found you on LinkedIn. You look like you do this. I don't know anything about that. Can you talk to them? They're very willing to talk. 1, just do it. 2, ask for help. And 3, just make it happen. Just go do it. Relationship building is important to me. People that just go and ask without trying to build a relationship, they're not going to get any help. But if you chat and say, hey, like, tell me about your business. People are very excited to do that.
Yeah. No, I think that relationship building, networking all play a key role as you want to continue to evolve. Everybody has different experiences. So you have a different perspective. When we're talking about these things, it's always great to expand our perspective by taking into the knowledge what's been going on in that other person's
world. Yes, I got another good one. I guess it would be 4. Like, be a vacuum. Like, I have some preconceived notions about how I thought the shop was going to go, but it doesn't matter if I was right or wrong. Suck up every bit of information you can and then make decisions based on that. I was wrong about some things and it didn't go the way that I thought. And we've changed and pivot and we're learning every day something new, but I'm sucking in all that information and learning everything I can.
So what I love about that is that you went in with some preconceived notions. When the data started to come in, you didn't double down on those notions. You learned from what was actually going on and then made the adjustment. So someone listening, don't be afraid to make the adjustment when you're trying something. You've asked the questions, you're getting answers, and then the reality is different than what you thought it was going to be. adjust. I think we started the conversation with making the adjustments. We're talking about the Naval Academy. Yeah. You're talking about the different degrees that you have. You adjust until you find what works. You don't give up.
I don't have all the answers. I can tell you all the things I've learned because there's a lot of them. But if you said, hey, what are the 7 things I need to know? I don't know. I think one of them is know that you don't know everything and learn as you go, I think is a big one.
If there was one thing that you wish the younger version of Matt knew when he was about to start this franchise, what would it be?
I think the one thing that I wished I knew was how to communicate better, you know, with my wife about it and the cost burden and the time burden. I work as a management consultant. I did 20 years in the Navy and I am very comfortable with that kind of stress in life. But I don't know that I did a good enough job relating that to my wife and how she was going to respond to that and how we were going to respond to that. Like, I was very comfortable in that environment. Turns out she is far less comfortable in that environment. And it's got some stress, some difficulties, you know, working through it. But that's probably the one thing that I should have done better.
It's a great acknowledgement that when you're making a shift in the change, it's not just you. It's going to impact your whole family. The sooner you can start communicating that and finding a way to communicate that in a way that your spouse will be able to understand it and at least start to prepare, the better off you're going to be. When I was growing up, the thought process was you get yourself a government job or you get yourself a job working for a corporation, you stay there, you work 30 years, you have everything, retirement set up, and you don't rock the boat. You stay and you don't rock the boat. So when it came time for me to leave and launch Engineer Your Success, my leadership development and coaching company, it took several months, years of me talking to my wife about what I wanted to do. As a provider, there is this pressure, there is this thing there where you want to make sure that your family is provided for. So you have that pressure of provision on top of the things that are driving you to grow your business.
When I was getting close to retirement, now the Navy is very built on a team kind of environment, but also it makes you feel like you're a key part of that team. So when I was getting close to retirement, I was like, man, when I leave, what are they going to do? And then I'm like, they have 400,000 of me. They're going to be just fine. It took a little while because I poured my heart and the soul into things, right? And I think that is probably the biggest aha moment for me. I can pour my heart and soul into things and the world's going to keep on turning. Whether or not you're successful, the sun's going to come up, it's going to go down, and just go do it. Knock things out and see how it goes. There's some risk involved, but there's risk with everything. So who knows?
Let's say there's somebody that you want to make a big impact on. What do you want to be as a takeaway for them from this episode?
So I think I do quite a bit of mentoring. One of the things I try to express to my mentees is each one of us is our own individual people. So just because I did it and because I have this drive, they have to find what drives them and what they want. I can't tell them that. I can help them figure out what they want. But once they figure out what they want, then go do that. And I'm not saying I jumped into franchising without doing homework. I did a ton of homework, but that's my personality. You have to find what your personality is, what you want, and then execute. Don't try to change who you are for the role that you want. Go find the role that fits your personality.
For folks that want to reach out to you, what's the best way to connect with you?
First of all, I'm definitely on LinkedIn. I have an email address, a phone number. People can reach out to me in any possible way, and I'll make sure that you have all that information and you can put it on the links for sure. Anybody reaches out to me, I'll talk to anybody.
So now we're going to get to the part of the interview where we're going to switch roles. So now you become the interviewer and I become the interviewee. What questions do you have for
me? So obviously we talked about how I arrived in the entrepreneurial world and what I'm doing. We talked a little bit about how you ended up here. If there was a young Dr. Bryant, you were talking to yourself, what would you do
differently? What would I do differently? There are a few things that come to mind. One, let's say this was 6-7 years ago. I'm a part of a mastermind. We have been talking about building a business, but the only thing I was focused on at that time was doing some life coaching. It wasn't as evolved as it is now with executive coaching, leadership development, facilitation. None of that was on the horizon. It was just this general concept of coaching. I can remember a veteran, Greg Washington, we're at this meeting and he looks at me and tells me, "You disgust me." I'm like, whoa, what's going on? And he says, "You're in your happy little bubble with your happy world. You got a happy marriage, great kids, great family. And you are reluctant to share what you have with the world, and people need to hear what you have to say. I can remember that as being one of the defining moments for me to think about, what does it look like for me to share more of who I am, more of my philosophies, more of what I'm thinking? And it's not that I have all the answers, because I do not have all the answers. What it does mean is I have a certain approach to life that has worked for me. So what does it look like for me to share that approach? Not to say that this is the only way, but here is a way in which you can redefine and continue to have success. Here is a way that you can maintain a strong relationship with your wife while you are building a career and then going to open up a business. The one piece of advice that I would give myself is share your story sooner. There are more people that can be impacted by you showing up authentically as yourself and just being you, because each of us, as you just said, are unique. We have a unique story. We have a unique way that we wire. We have a unique way of how we communicate. And there are people that are going to listen to this episode that are wired in a way that they can hear exactly what Matt is saying and receive exactly from how you're saying it, Matt. And there are people that are going to hear me and what I'm talking about and be like, yeah, he gets me. He gets me.
Yeah, that's good stuff. I remember, because this happened a few years ago, I'm also an adjunct professor, and somebody's like, well, why aren't you sharing more? I was like, well, who wants to listen to me? Like, well, what do I have to offer? And it's a question that people like, hey, like, you know a lot of stuff. You know, there's nothing wrong with sharing. People that want to listen are going to, and people that don't aren't. So I think it was a very interesting point for me to that transition to maybe I do have stuff to offer. I haven't really thought about it that way, but it's pretty impressive. So as we move forward, what does success look like for you, or what do you have left to offer? Where are you going?
That's a great question, because success continues to evolve as I evolve. When I first started making the transition into full-time entrepreneurship, it was partially because I knew my kids were getting older. We have two boys. They're 17 and 16. My oldest is going to be going to college in the fall. Youngest is a sophomore in high school. So we have a little over two more years before they're out of high school. I'm not going to say out of the house, but for they're out of high school for that next transition. And so I started thinking, what do I want life to look like when that happens? And started making changes in order for us to be able to have the flexibility. Maybe we want to do more traveling. Maybe my wife and I just want to spend some more time doing certain things. Now, as I think about where I am, what success is looking like, being able to continue to show up fully as myself. And part of that means that I am not only sharing leadership development knowledge or facilitation or communication, but I'm also at this intersection of business and faith and talking about how can we have an integrated faith-filled approach to what we do and continue to have success.
It's amazing. Good stuff. What do you have left to give that is not family-oriented? Where's the podcast going? In 5 years, what's it going to look like?
In 5 years, I think I would want the podcast to continue to build a community of leaders who are dedicated to winning at work and at home. There are some folks that think that the only place to win is at work. And there are other people that think, well, if you don't have your home life situated, then work doesn't matter. I'm here to tell you that you need to have both. If you have your home life, great, but your finances, your work, and your career is crap, you're going to have a problem. And it's going to leak over to that home life. If your work life is great and you're having things that are going on at home, guess what? It's going to leak over to your work life. If you're not able to integrate, balance, whatever you want to call it, to be able to address both sides of that equation, then I think it's going to be really difficult for you to live a fulfilled life.
So I'm going to ask you one question, and then I'm going to give you my opinion on the answer that I'm going to ask. So you, in both those last two segments, talked about winning at work, winning at life. So how do you define winning, or how should your listeners define winning?
There is no one definition of winning. You have to define what that is for you, because you have different circumstances in your life right now, whether it's work, whether it's home. And so that's up to you to define. For me, when I came up with this concept, it was when several years ago, my first son was born. He was born 5 weeks early, but he was fine. He was healthy. But I was working up in Washington, D.C. I live in Richmond, Virginia. So I had a 2-hour, hour and a half, 2-hour commute going back and forth. I'm climbing the career ladder. I'm doing all of those things that we say we do to be successful. I'm saying to myself that I'm doing all of this for my family, when in reality, I was doing it for me because I enjoyed what I did and I liked the accolades and the job. Then my youngest son was born. He was born at 26 weeks in a day. So he was 1 pound, 14 ounces. And so now I'm in this situation like, okay, what do I do? What does success look like now? What does winning look like now? As it can't look like what it did before. And I asked myself the 3 questions that I say changed my life. Do you want to win at work? And my answer was, yes, I do. I want to have success at work. And I was having success at work. Do you want to win at home? I don't know anybody that doesn't want to win at home. But when I started to reflect on my home life, leaving at 0:30 in the morning, coming back when it was late, not having time to spend with my 1-year-old child, having a wife to be there for, just to be a support for her, and not really having the capacity to do that. So at that time, I couldn't define what winning looked like, but I knew what losing looked like because that's what I was doing.
Fair enough. I'm in alignment with your assessment on winning. Winning changes for me regularly. Right now, my oldest daughter is 22, college graduate. She works as a diesel mechanic and loves what she does. That's winning to me. My 17-year-old daughter, she's going to graduate high school in a couple of years. She's pretty happy every day. That's winning to me. A job that I love, I get to be on this fun podcast. Those are all winning things. So, you know, the friend that asked me, well, how are you going to start a franchise? I'm confident. I'm going to figure it out. I just believe that we're going to get where we need to go. And that's what winning looks like to me. And I'm sure in a couple of years, it'll look like something different. So I think that's super fun.
I've really enjoyed our conversation. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with our podcast listening audience?
No, I mean, I guess the big one I would say is that I was completely serious. If you want to reach out to me and you want to talk, I guarantee I'm your person, you know, and I'll talk about anything. I've enjoyed our conversation. I'm sure we're going to stay in touch and I look forward to more.
Well, thank you again. I'm going to end this podcast episode like I end every episode. And that's this: many people know what to do. Fewer people know how to do it. And there's a select group of people that follow through and do it and are able to live the life of their dreams. Matt Thompson, I want to thank you for being part of that select few.